Good morning. How you doing this morning? You're listening to 1180 WFYL. It's a new day. Mike Levins here. Thank you so much for joining us this morning as we talk about the headlines. We've got some good news from the Middle East. Finally, some good news. ISIS is routed. That's right. You heard me right. ISIS routed by Kurdish fighters in a Syrian border town. This is a Fox News article. U.S.-backed Kurdish fighters took control of a strategic town on the Syria-Turkey border on Monday, forcing ISIS militants to flee and cutting off a key supply line to the self-proclaimed caliphate's capital. The Washington Post reported that the main Kurdish fighting force, known as the YPG, backed by affiliated Syrian rebels, had captured the town of Tal Abyad, claiming control of the town center by nightfall Monday. Good morning and welcome to the program. Some good news coming from the Middle East, finally, in the fight against ISIS. And this was a long time coming. A long time coming. That these Kurdish fighters now, which have been backed by the U.S. and have backed by coalition airstrikes, are now producing fruit in the fight against ISIS. And now it seems a major blow has been struck to halt the momentum of ISIS across the Middle East. And hopefully it was the beginning of their downfall. We'll see, though, as the news plays out. The Washington Post originally reported on this. We have Fox News reporting on it following them. This is the article I'm reading from Fox, claiming that the Post also reported that advancing forces had cut off ISIS's escape route from the town, surrounding it from east, south, and west. The loss of Tal Abyad, some 50 miles north of Raqqa, the capital of ISIS self-declared caliphate, is the extremist's biggest setback since Kurdish fighters took control of the border town of Kobani near Turkey after fighting IS for months. The Kurdish victory deprives ISIS of a direct route for bringing in foreign militants and supplies and links the Kurds to fronts, putting even more pressure on Raqqa. An anti-ISIS media collective based in Raqqa said the extremists had set up checkpoints in the center of the city on Monday and installed security cameras in the main square. The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights confirmed to the Associated Press that the Kurdish fighters had, quote, almost full control of Tal Abyad by Monday evening and had taken command of the border crossing with Turkey. It said some 40 Islamic State militants were targeted by U.S.-led airstrikes as they tried to flee south. This is the first good news we've heard about the fight against ISIS since it began, I think, in my opinion. Now, this should be a major strategic victory because of the cutoff of these supplies. And if you're talking now about linking the two fronts of the Kurds, now hopefully this momentum can build into something even more. They may even be able to slowly cut off more supply lines to Raqqa as they begin to free more towns, which would effectively put it underneath a siege. If you cut off the supply lines to the capital of ISIS, then you're going to see their power dwindle dramatically. And hopefully the Kurds can do that. And they're already doing it now. This is a huge victory, and this is great news coming from the Middle East. And that goes right into our scripture of the day today. Isaiah 41, verse 10. Now, this is, in context, is talking about Israel. But let's read, let's keep in mind that this is true for Christians today as well. Isaiah 41, verse 10. So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. That's our scripture of the day today. And it's great coming on the heels of some great news, isn't it? Great news that ISIS is finally meeting its match, it would see. And is finally going in the opposite direction. Now we are the ones who are putting ISIS on their heels. Now the Kurds are a largely secular fighting force. They take a lot of credit for this. This is because of them fighting on the ground. The airstrikes, of course, are helping, but we're finally seeing some fruit because they are backed by the U.S. We've heard the Kurds in the news before. They're backed by the U.S., and keep on fighting, all of them down there. Now, I just want to continue reading this article. An AP photographer on the Turkish side of the border saw several dozen YPG fighters waving their yellow triangular flag and flashing victory signs. Several dozen Kurdish gunmen were seen running up a hill moving west. A few people on the Syrian side of the border were seen raising the green, white, and red flag of the Free Syrian Army before being apprehended by Turkish security because they broke a hole in the border fence. A contingent of Free Syrian Army fighters is battling alongside the Kurds in an effective alliance against ISIS called Burkan al-Furat, or translated means Volcano of the Euphrates. Earlier, Kurdish units marching west from Kobani and others marching east from the Kurdish town of Ras al-Yan met up in the village of, I'm not even going to try to pronounce that, some 2 miles south of Tal Abyad as they encircled the town from three sides, leaving Turkey as the only outlet. The village is Kaysaria. Hope I'm saying that right. As with the Kurdish victory in Kobani, the YPG fighters' advance under the cover of the U.S.-led air campaign highlighted the decisive importance of combining airstrikes with the presence of a cohesive and motivated ally on the ground, so clearly absent in Iraq and other parts of Syria, this article notes. With most of Syria now controlled by either ISIS or forces loyal to President Bashar Assad, the U.S. has found a reliable partner in the YPG, a group of moderate, mostly secular Kurdish militiamen driven by revolutionary fervor and the desire for self-rule. They've apparently taken back more than 500 Kurdish and Christian towns in northeastern Syria, and they have even seized strategic mountains that were held earlier by the Islamic State group. They recently pushed into Raqqa province, an ISIS stronghold where Tal Abyad is located. So that's the latest from the Middle East. Now, this is not without some controversy, and this is worth noting, because the Kurds are the main force fighting here. And let me just read the rest of this article for you, and we'll talk about this here in a minute. The Kurdish advance has caused the displacement of more than 16,000 people who fled to Turkey in the past 2 weeks. On Monday, up to 3,000 more refugees arrived at the Akal border crossing, according to the Turkish-run state-run TRT television. An AP photographer saw large numbers of people at the border and thick smoke billowing as U.S.-led coalition aircraft targeted IS militants in Tal Abyad. As Kurdish fighters pushed deeper into ISIS strongholds in northern Syria, tensions with ethnic Arabs and Turkmen in the region have risen. Now, this is where the controversy comes in, and this is important to note because this is going to dictate future victories in the region. On Monday, more than a dozen Syrian rebel groups accused the Kurdish fighters of deliberately displacing thousands of Arabs and Turkmen from Tal Abyad in the western countryside of predominantly Kurdish Hasaka province. In a statement, they accused the YPG of committing, quote, ethnic cleansing, a charge strongly denied by the Kurds. The accusation, which was not backed by evidence of ethnic or sectarian killings, threatened to escalate tensions between ethnic Arabs and Kurds as the Kurdish fighters conquer more territory in northern Syria. And there's evil behind this. There's evil behind this notion that there's ethnic cleansing. Whether there is evidence of it, and there's no evidence that has been reported. This is the first time I've ever even heard an accusation like that, and I think that it is very suspicious that it comes off the heels of a major victory. Don't you think? Don't you think that coming off the heels of a major victory against ISIS, that such a charge is more than suspicious coming against the Kurds, who are the ones who basically are the fighting force that got this done? So right now, it's a ridiculous charge. There is no evidence backing it. I think it's quite funny that, no, it's not funny, but I think that it is suspicious that this charge comes up right when there's a major victory in the region, that this is now the controversy. And don't think that this is going to go away, because this obviously shows that there's some tension between the Kurds and the Arabs. Now, the Kurdish are the Turkmen, quote-unquote. Arabs, of course, you're talking about the Free Syrian Army, and there are different groups. Now, some of these Arab groups are ultra-conservative. Some of them may even be just as bad as ISIS. We need to remember that as well. The Kurds seem to be the only secular group that seems to be the one who, number one, has gotten something done. Number two, is going to probably be a long-standing ally. Because they're secular. Because anything that's not secular in the region right now is Islamic. And eventually, that comes to work against us as a country and our interests in the region, namely against ISIS. Because before ISIS, there was Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. Who's to say someone else wouldn't just replace ISIS? And that's the last thing that we want. The last thing that we want is simply another terror group controlling the region. When we get back, we're going to talk about an interesting article on the AP about government transparency. You'd be interested to hear about that in a moment.
A government of laws and not of men. John Adams, 1774.
Have you checked out our podcasts on our WFYL homepage? Did you know you could stream us anytime, night or day, 24/7 at 1180WFYL.com? If you like what you hear on WFYL, please email us at info@1180WFYL.com to let us know.
Did you just look down at your phone? You did it again, didn't you? You know, you're flying down the road in a 3-ton hunk of steel, and a text takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. At 55 miles per hour, that's long enough to travel the length of a football field and cause some serious damage. Turn it off. Trust me. Whatever it is, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Balancing life is our biggest challenge, spiritually, physically, and emotionally. Here on WFYL, we address a balanced life every Saturday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. We have great guests such as the number one best-selling author and health coach Mari Pizarro, and as seen on The Doctor Show, Dawn Cotillo from Be Balanced Centers, and many, many more. I'm the host of Balanced Life, Renee Gable. Please listen every Saturday, 8 to 9 a.m., because a balanced life matters.
Have you thought about your own mortality? At some point, concern of your family leads you to wonder how you would cope with the costs if you were to die. That's where your life insurance can help provide the resources to protect your family and finances. Hi, I'm Bruce Hengie of the Hengie Agency. My mission is to help individuals make wise decisions and to help protect the future of their families. For a custom consultation, call me at 215-704-6385. That's Bruce Hengie at 215-704-6385.
There's an interesting article from the Associated Press that I think is timely. Now, this article is an old article. It was released on March 13th of this year. That's old for us. I don't know for you. Mike Levins here. Welcome to the program this morning. You can call in at 610-539-TALK, 610-539-8255. Let your voice be heard this morning. Now, this is on the government's so-called right-to-know laws. And it's interesting to note who wrote this article by the AP. This is Gary Pruitt, who, if you don't know, he is president and CEO of the Associated Press, which is the oldest news reporting agency, even our nation. Is it in the world? I'm not too sure about that, but this is an interesting article, though. Because the CEO of the AP claims, and this was back in March, that the government is undermining right-to-know laws. Now, what does that mean? Well, let's read the article. It's getting harder and more expensive to use public records to hold government officials accountable. Authorities are undermining the laws that are supposed to guarantee citizens' rights to information, turning the right to know into just plain no. Associated Press journalists filed hundreds of requests for government files last year, simply trying to use the rights granted under state open records laws and the U.S. Freedom of Information Act. What we discovered reaffirmed what we have seen all too frequently in recent years. The systems created to give citizens information about their government are badly broken and getting worse all the time. We're talking about this issue now because, and this is in context of the article when it was written, something called Sunshine Week. It was created about a decade ago, which showcases the laws given to Americans that let them know what the government is up to. Now, this is an interesting article for a couple of different reasons and slipped underneath the radar for a lot of people. Now, I don't know how much this was reported back in the day. It seemed back at the time when it was released around March. I certainly don't remember any major news agencies reporting on this article. But to me, that the CEO of AP would write an article determining this, that is very telling, and it's very scary. Shortly after Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 went missing over the South China Sea, we asked the Pentagon's top satellite, going back to the article now, imagery unit, top satellite imagery unit, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, what the U.S. was doing to help the search. Agencies are supposed to give a preliminary response to such questions within 20 days. A full year later, after the largest and most expensive search in aviation history, the agency is telling us only that it has too many FOIA, FOIA, or the Freedom of Information Act, requests to meet its deadlines. A few months ago, the Treasury Department sent 237 pages in its latest response to our requests regarding Iran trade sanctions. Nearly all 237 pages were completely blacked out on the basis that they contained businesses' trade secrets. When was our request? 9 years ago. Let me see if you heard that right. 9 years ago, the Associated Press requested information regarding Iran trade sanctions. 9 years ago. A few months from March 13th, which I'm guessing was at the end of last year, they received 237 pages that were almost completely blacked out, that apparently they contained, this is the reason for blacking them out, businesses' trade secrets. They received those 237 pages, which they requested, part of a FOIA request, 9 years ago, received them last year. You don't need to be a genius to tell something's in the water, and it's not good. Now, the reason that you should be concerned about this is because a lack of transparency in our government is not confined, and I'm learning this as well, confined to President Obama, any administration, any bureaucracy. It's not confined to one area. This is not simply a top-down problem. This is a overreaching problem in our government. It's an overreaching problem where the people aren't able to hold government officials accountable. And we, if anything can be done about it, it can be done now. If anything at all can be done now. can be done at this point. The government, now I read those examples over again to give you an idea of how ridiculous or how substantial this lack of transparency is in our government. 9 years ago, they requested this information, and it is now, only a few months ago, did they get a request. Information which was heavily amended to where you can't even tell what the information itself is about. Agencies are supposed to give, this is worth noting again, to give at least a preliminary response to such questions within 20 days. A full year later, upon requests regarding Malaysia Airlines Flight 370, the agency that was questioned, National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, this is the Pentagon's top satellite imagery unit, said that it has too many FOIA requests to meet its deadlines, Freedom of Information Act. It takes the State Department about 18 months to answer. I'll read that again. It takes the State Department about 18 months to answer or refuse to answer anything other than a simple request. In the week of March 13th, the AP filed a lawsuit against the department for failing to turn over files covering Hillary Rodham Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State, including one request we made 5 full years ago. As the president said, the United States should not withhold or censor government files merely because they might be embarrassing. But it happens anyway. This is the CEO of the Associated Press. If you just tuned in, welcome to the program. Mike Levin's here. You could call in at 610-539-TALK, 610-539-8255. Let your voice be heard this morning. But this is important. It's important for you to know. This is not simply confined, because we seem to have had a lack of transparency in what the media would purport, is that this has really been exasperated with the Obama administration. He claimed he wanted to be transparent, and now we're less transparent than we ever were. This isn't simply an Obama administration issue. If anything, this article says, it says that that's not the case. We'll go ahead and finish reading the article when we get back. But then, when we return, we're going to have the latest on what Mexico has done in their Supreme Court, what our Supreme Court's going to be doing in a little while.
Working for your liberty right here in Philadelphia, broadcasting freedom, shining light throughout the tri-state area, singing freedom, shining light from Philly to the nations. 1180 shining forth, we are the Freedom Station, WFYN.
News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. A balcony collapse in Berkeley, California. At least 5 people are dead, 8 hurt, according to police.
The balcony was on the 4th floor of an apartment building. Police got the call around 1 a.m. local time. So far, they don't know why it fell or what those people were doing on the balcony at the time, but investigators are looking into it.
Fox News Radio's Tanya J. Powers. The #2 leader of Al-Qaeda reported killed by a CIA drone strike in Yemen. He led its most active branch.
Al-Qaeda that are based in the Arabian Peninsula are saying that a U.S. drone strike did in fact kill their head, Nasser al-Wahaji, and I've heard they have elected, if you like, another leader, Qassem al-Rahim. So he will be the new leader of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula.
Sky News correspondent Shireen Tadros in Sana'a, Yemen. Wahashi was a longtime aide to Osama bin Laden, elevated in the terrorist organization after his death. Fox News, we report. You decide.
If you're looking for a healthy treat today, why not head down to TCBY Frozen Yogurt? It's located in the King of Prussia Mall, the Plaza section opposite L.L. Bean. They have shakes and smoothies and hot fudge sundaes and, yes, even mint chocolate chunk frozen yogurt. And if you tell them you're a listener of WFYL, receive a 10% discount. So today, why not? Head on down to TCBY Frozen Yogurt located in the King of Prussia Mall.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. Pennsylvania's General Assembly once again is looking at a possible expansion of gambling to try and meet budget shortfalls. This time around, the proposal is to legalize online gambling, which, as one senator said just last week, it would in effect put a slot machine in every home, even at 3 a.m. Well, first, government gambling revenues don't match the promises. You remember the property tax relief that Ed Rendell promised when legalizing casinos? Well, that hardly materialized. And as we predicted at that time, casino gambling would create nearly 300,000 gambling addicts statewide, causing crime, bankruptcy, family breakup, and suicide. The most recent survey shows we're at 280,000 addicted gamblers in Pennsylvania and climbing. Government-sponsored gambling is a bad idea, and adding to it is simply irrational. Find out more about this issue at our website at pafamily.org.
School property taxes are out of sight and going up almost every year. Even if you've paid off your mortgage, you haven't paid off the state of Pennsylvania. If you lose your job, you could lose your home too. But there is hope on the horizon. Harrisburg is considering a bill which will eliminate property taxes for school funding. It replaces it with a broad-based small increase in income taxes and sales taxes. This makes all Pennsylvanians responsible for school funding, not just property owners. Please join us at Montgomery County Community College in Pottstown on Thursday, June 25th at 7 p.m. for a town hall meeting to discuss how we can fully fund our schools without taxing people out of their homes. Town hall meeting, Montgomery County Community College in Pottstown on Thursday, June 25th at 7 p.m. Admission is free.
Transparency in government? I think not. Welcome back to the program, 1180 WFYL. It's a new day. Mike Levins here. You can call in at 610-539-TALK, 610-539-8255. Get this. We've been reading an article from the Associated Press from their president and CEO. He's the author of this now. Of one of the oldest news agencies probably in the world. In government emails that AP obtained in reporting about who pays for Michelle Obama's expensive dresses. That's right. The National Archives and Records Administration blacked out one sentence repeatedly, citing a part of the law intended to shield personal information, such as social security numbers or home addresses. This article claims the blacked out sentence, the government slipped and let it through on one page of the redacted documents. Quote, "We live in constant fear of upsetting the WH. White House." To its credit, the U.S. government does not routinely overcharge for copies of public records, but price gouging intended to discourage public records requests is a serious problem in many states. For example, officials in Ferguson, Missouri billed the AP $135 an hour. Let me repeat that. In this article that was released March 13th of this year, the Associated Press was charged by officials in Ferguson, Missouri, $135 an hour for nearly a day's work merely to retrieve emails from a handful of accounts about the fatal shooting of Michael Brown. That was roughly 10 times the cost of an entry-level Ferguson clerk's salary. Other organizations, including BuzzFeed, were told they would have to pay unspecified thousands of dollars for emails and memos about Ferguson's traffic citation policies and changes to local elections. It's like a commodity, supply and demand. There's more demand, so the cost increases. Apparently, that's what our government information system is like. The more people want information, the higher the cost is going to be. That just makes you feel nice and comfy. Last year, the executive director of the South Florida Gay News asked the Broward County Sheriff's Office for copies of emails that contained a derogatory word for gays. The sheriff's office said it would cost $399,000 and take 4 years. "They succeeded in stonewalling me," said the editor, Jason Parsley. In Mississippi, the state education department demanded more than $70 an hour to review records when a reporter asked for its reorganization plans. Despite head-pounding frustrations in using them, the Freedom of Information Act and state open records laws are powerful reporting tools. But it's important to remember that they don't just exist for journalists. They are there for everyone. The right to know what public officials are doing, how they're going about it, what money they are spending, and why, that right belongs to all citizens. Government works better when the people who put it in office and pay for it with their taxes have an unobstructed view of what it is doing. And that is why it is vital that we all fight every attempt from federal foot-dragging to outrageous photocopying bills to hide the public's information behind a big, padlocked door. We need to let the sun shine in. That was Gary Pruitt, president and CEO of the Associated Press. This was written the week of something called Sunshine Week, which advocates for transparency in government. But aren't some of those numbers enlightening? $135 an hour for information regarding Ferguson. $399,000 in 4 years to get information and emails. $70 an hour. In Mississippi, from the state education department, when a reporter asked for its reorganization plans. Mind you, these aren't just for reporters, these requests for information. These are for you, the American citizenry. This is for each and every American as their right to know what their government is doing. See, this isn't an issue that stops just at the White House. Even though we have that interesting part of this article referring to Michelle Obama's expensive dresses and how the redacted documents, a sentence was found saying we live in constant fear of upsetting the White House, or WH. Our government is not letting us know what it's doing for a reason, because it's not very proud of what it's doing and knows that if that got out into the public light in a uninhibited manner, that many people may change their votes. And that's not what government officials want. See, they want you to keep voting the way that you're voting right now because they've got it set up the way that they like it. It's a fine-tuned machine. And it is your right and even duty, some would argue, as a citizen, to hold that government accountable. The question is, will we do it? Isn't that the question? The question of the day. Welcome to the program if you just tuned in. Mike Levin's here. You could call in at 610-539-TALK, 610-539-8255. Let your voice be heard this morning. Here's an article from Christian Today. This was published on the 12th of June. And it talks about how Christian pastors are vowing civil disobedience campaigning if same-sex marriage is permitted by the Supreme Court, which we are all waiting for the decision to be released. Here's the article. A group of Christian pastors has vowed to launch a civil disobedience campaign if the U.S. Supreme Court decides to allow same-sex marriage in a ruling expected this month. Dr. Rick Scarborough, a Baptist pastor and president of the activist group Vision America, said if it ever came to deciding whether to follow God's law or law passed by politicians, he would follow God's law. He said he and other Christian evangelicals will refuse to recognize any Supreme Court ruling that favors same-sex marriage. Quote, I will continue to preach that homosexuality is a sinful lifestyle, Scarborough told News Radio 1200 WOAI. He said about 40,000 pastors and church leaders have signed a petition at www.defendmarriage.org to, quote, resist all government efforts to require them to accept gay marriage. And they will accept any fine and jail time to protect their religious freedom and the freedom of others. Quote, marriage as existing solely between one man and one woman precedes civil government, according to the petition. Scarborough said, quote, never before has a civilization in the history of man approved of marriage between two men and two women. He said people who refuse to accept an order making same-sex marriage acceptable face difficulties, including companies and religious organizations that may face repercussions if they do not hire gay employees. Schools may be forced to teach that gay marriage is acceptable, lest they lose their tax-exempt status. He said, adding that private businesses like bakeries and florists have been sued for refusing to provide service to same weddings. Scarborough defended their planned civil disobedience campaign, saying that it has a long history in the U.S., including the fight against segregation by Dr. Martin Luther King. Dr. King in the Birmingham jail said Christians have a duty to obey and respect God's law, Scarborough said. In their petition, the signatories said, on the matter of marriage, we stand in solidarity. We affirm that marriage and family have been inscribed by the divine architect into the order of creation. Marriage is ontologically between one man and one woman, ordered toward the union of the spouses, open to children and formative of family. It said the government should defend marriage and not undermine it. Quote, no civil institution, including the United States Supreme Court or any court, has authority to redefine marriage, according to the petition. We got to head to a break, but when we come back, we're going to take this article apart piece by piece. What does it say that we agree with? What does it say that we disagree with? What does it say that we should listen to all the more? And what do you say? That number, 610-539-TALK, 610-539-8255. It's a new day on 1180 WFYL.
She fell in love with my blue eyes.
But that love is dead.
Yeah.
Been wearing old contacts. Now my eyes are all red.
Girl.
Why'd I run out of contacts? I see nothing clear. Itchy eyes,
old lenses. I can't hold back my tears.
Never run out of contacts. Wish I could see you again.
Get free expedited shipping on all app orders. Never run out of contacts.
1-800-CONTACTS.
Sanford Altifer Companies offers auction, appraisal, and real estate marketing methods. The Sanford Altifer Companies is dedicated to ethically and creatively help guide people through the maze of personal property and real estate in transition. For auction, appraisal, and real estate services, visit or shop Sanford Altifer Companies at their auction center in Hatfield, PA, or online at sanfordaltifercompanies.com. Once again, that's sanfordaltifercompanies.com.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
The father of the American space program died this day, June 16, 1977. He developed the famed V-2 rocket for Germany before emigrating to the U.S., where in 1958 he launched America's first satellite. He became the director of NASA, the U.S. Guided Missile Program, and founded the National Space Institute. His name was Wernher von Braun, who stated, "The laws of nature that enable us to fly to the moon also enable us to destroy our home planet. The guidelines of what we ought to do are furnished in the moral law of God."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
Father's Day is a great time to consider God's role as father. As a father of six and grandfather to nine, I've thought much about my role, and this I've learned. The more we men emulate God, the Heavenly Father, the better the husband and father will be. I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network. As our fatherhood model, God's the wise father, the great counselor and comforter. He's just, kind, merciful, and patient. He instructs and guides, protects and shields. He firmly disciplines but loves unconditionally. He loves so much he gave his son, the perfect sacrifice to save our souls. He's the humble servant, yet the greatest leader. He's the model in every way of what an earthly father should be. To you, fathers and grandfathers, I ask, how much do you resemble God the Father? Remember, you are the picture of God to your wife and children. What view of God do they have? I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, asking you, my fellow fathers, this Father's Day, to think about this.
Sign up as a partner at papastors.net.
Never before has a civilization in the history of man approved of marriage between two men and two women. That quote coming from Dr. Rick Scarborough, a Baptist pastor and president of the activist group Vision America, who also said if it ever came to deciding whether to follow God's law or law passed by politicians, he would follow God's law, vowing civil disobedience if same-sex marriage is permitted. Welcome to the program, 1180 WFYL to New Day. Call in at 610-539-TALK. And let your voice be heard this morning, 610-539-8255. This comes off the heels of the Mexican Supreme Court quietly legalizing same-sex marriage. Now, looking at a New York Times article into this matter from Mexico City, 2 days ago, this was published by the New York Times. His church turned him away. His family discouraged him from a public fight, and the government of the state where he lives vowed it would never happen again. This is following from the beginning of the article, a gay man in his difficulty. Or struggle, I guess you could say. But to the part of the article that is the newsworthy element Argentina, Uruguay, and Brazil already allow same-sex marriage. Chile plans to recognize same-sex civil unions this year. Ecuador approved civil unions in April. In Colombia, grants same-sex couples many of the same rights extended to heterosexual married couples. It's a huge change from where things were 10 years ago, said Jason Pearson, a professor at the University of Illinois at Springfield, who studies gay marriage trends in Latin America. The shift in Mexico, the second largest country in Latin America, after Brazil, is the product of a legal strategy that advocates used to bypass state legislatures, which have shown little inclination and often hostility to legalizing gay marriage. I'll read that again. The shift in Mexico, the second largest country in Latin America after Brazil, is the product of a legal strategy that advocates used to bypass state legislatures, which have shown little inclination and often hostility to legalizing gay marriage. In 2009, Mexico City, a federal district and large liberal island in this socially conservative country, legalized gay marriage, a first in Latin America. There have been 5,297 same-sex weddings since then, couples coming to the city from other states. There are states in Mexico. In most of the rest of the country, marriage is legally defined as a union between a man and a woman, laws that may remain on the books despite the court's decisions. The Supreme Court upheld Mexico City's law in 2010, adding that other states had to recognize marriages performed there. Advocates of gay marriage saw this as an opportunity to use the court's ruling to assert that marriage laws in other states were discriminatory. The court, taking into account international decisions and anti-discrimination treaties that Mexico has signed, has steadily agreed, granting injunctions in individuals' cases permitting gay couples to marry in states with laws forbid it. As the purpose of matrimony is not procreation, there is no justified reason that the matrimonial union be heterosexual, nor that it be stated as between only a man and a woman, the ruling said. Such a statement turns out to be discriminatory in its mere expression. Reading further in the ruling, the court, bypassing state legislature, has effectively passed same-sex marriage in Mexico. Going back to the Christian Today article, what can we glean from it? Rick Scarborough, never before has a civilization in the history of man approved of marriage between two men and two women. He must be referring to formally, because we've seen nations obviously entertain and celebrate homosexuality in the past. But I believe what he's referring to is that never has a nation formally approved of marriage, a union between two men and two women. Now, what does this have to say about civil disobedience for the Christian? What does that look like? A group of Christian pastors vowed to launch a civil disobedience campaign. And a lot of this is being stirred up now because of Mexico and what their Supreme Court has done, quietly legalizing same-sex marriage for the country. This is now back in the public sphere for the time being until the Supreme Court releases their formal ruling on same-sex marriage for this country. Now, when they do that, which is expected to be this month, then it's going to be the biggest political hot button for probably many weeks to come after that point. But it will probably quietly die down until you hear of an act of civil disobedience. Because the big question for this ruling, when it comes through, if they were to rule in favor of homosexual marriage, is what is going to be the response of the Christian community? Is it going to be widespread civil disobedience? Is it going to be civil disobedience contained only to pastors? What will it be? And is the Supreme Court going to force pastors to officiate same-sex weddings? Or is it merely going to be confined to the government? I think that, and I would like to think this as well, but I would think that to begin it would be confined to the government. Why? Because every law that we disagree with that subverts the will of the people has to start off with little fanfare, just like this one in Mexico, completely bypassing their legislature because the people's elected representatives are socially conservative. It would never work there. So they bypassed the legislature completely and went to courts, which basically are little monarchies of their own, in order to get a law passed. I think they're going to do that because, number one, that's going to cool down Christians. It's going to cool down pastors because they're not going to be forced. They're not going to be forced to officiate same-sex weddings. I believe that's what's going to happen. I believe it's just going to be legalized at a governmental level. What may be coming after that is speaking out against homosexuality. You're going to hear it start talking about how it may be considered hate speech, just like it is in Canada right now, because it is illegal in Canada for pastors to preach from the pulpit against homosexuality, even though they believe it's from Scripture and it's their religious views, which I would agree with as well. You would find that that is going to be the new national conversation, because I do not believe they would be as so bold to force pastors, because this is a huge hot button in the political sphere, to force pastors to marry homosexual couples. I do not believe that's what they're going to do to come out with, because they're going to face fierce opposition to that, I believe. And I don't know if they're ready for that. I don't know if their ruling would be able to withstand that.
Join me, Carla Dedessi, here every Friday from 8 until 9 for Your Family Matters. This is going to be an epic year, 2015. For Your Family Matters. We are going to continue to protect your family, your faith, while we are having fun. We're going to bring cutting-edge news to you, the current events, current resources, and tools that are going to give you the best family ever. So strap on your seatbelt and join me for this wild ride in 2015 on Your Family Matters every Friday morning. Don't miss us.
You're listening to WFYL 1180, working for your liberty and things that matter. Thanks for listening.
Broadcasting live from historic West Norriton Township, this is AM 1180. AM 1180. WFYL, King of Prussia, Philadelphia.
Fox News Radio, I'm Dave Anthony. Why is a big question in Berkeley, California this morning after an apartment balcony gave way, sending people falling to their deaths. Fox News Radio's Tanya J. Powers has the latest live.
Berkeley Police Officer Jennifer Coates says 5 people are dead, 8 are hurt, some of them critically.
Our officers and our paramedics worked really hard to do what they could to help these, the injured.
The balcony was on the 4th floor of that apartment building. There's no word yet on the ages or genders of the victims, but the Irish government says some of its citizens were killed in that collapse, Dave.
Now, Tanya, they're getting ready for Bill. They're already starting to feel the tropical storm's outer bands hitting Texas. Some areas could get up to a foot of rain.
The concern is about inland flash flooding, especially in cities. Houston got hit hard just a month ago. Several people killed. They're in their cars. They're on highway underpasses, and they can't get out. So there's been a number of rescue teams already deployed to make sure that doesn't happen again. When you go around the city, you go into stores, you see a lot of empty shelves.
That's Fox's Steve Harrigan in Houston. 17 people are dead.
dead in Tunisia after a passenger train slammed into a big truck that was trying to beat that train across the tracks. 70 others were hurt. The U.S. takes out a terrorist, Al-Qaeda's second in command. The terror group confirms Nasir al-Wahishi was killed in a drone strike last week.
He became leader of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, based in Yemen, which was seen as an increasingly lethal branch of the Al-Qaeda organization.
That's Fox's Doug Luzader. A British family is fearing their loved ones have gone to join ISIS in Syria. Three sisters and their nine children did not return from an Islamic pilgrimage and have broken off contact. One of those kids is just 3 years old. They're cheering another championship in Chicago. The Blackhawks won hockey's famed Stanley Cup for the third time in 6 years, shutting out the Tampa Bay Lightning 2-0 in Game 6 of the NHL Final. This is Fox News Radio. Fair and balanced.
And now another golf confessional brought to you by Golfsmith. A man told his wife he only wanted a nice card this Father's Day, so she went to Golfsmith and got the new tailor-made AeroBurner iron set and a free $100 gift card. He was overwhelmed by the thoughtfulness of the card and couldn't really blame her for keeping the irons for herself. Hurry into Golfsmith from now until June 28th and get a free gift card of up to $100 when you purchase a new tailor-made AeroBurner club. Golfsmith, anything for golf.
I'm Jay Farner with some great news on how you could save an average of $3,000 per year on your mortgage. Call Quicken Loans now at 800-QUICKEN to see if you qualify for the government's Home Affordable Refinance Program, or HARP. The HARP guidelines have changed. There's less paperwork and often no appraisal required. Call 800-QUICKEN. That's 800-QUICKEN, or visit quickenloans.com.
Important terms and conditions apply. Call us for cost information. Equal housing lender. License law 50 states and NMLS number 3030.
Our country's on a very bad course, and the question is, what are we going to do about it?
Jeb Bush hopes we put him in the Oval Office. Yesterday became the 11th Republican candidate in the crowded race for president. In a few hours, Donald Trump is expected to be the 12th to announce a run for president. Then there's Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton. Her time as Secretary of State gets more scrutiny today as a House committee investigating Benghazi questions a longtime Clinton friend. Fox News Radio's Rachel Sutherland is live in Washington.
Sidney Blumenthal, a Clinton confidant, will face questions today from the Benghazi Select Committee behind closed doors. The panel wants to know why he emailed sensitive information about Libya, the then Secretary of State Clinton, in the days after the attacks on the diplomatic post that killed four Americans, including an ambassador. Fox News has learned that Blumenthal's attorney handed over some 60 emails just ahead of today's deposition, but those documents have never been made available by the State Department. Dave?
Rachel, an Egyptian court has confirmed a death sentence handed to the ousted President Mohamed Morsi over a mass prison break during the 2011 uprising that eventually brought him to power in Egypt. The judge confirmed the ruling today after consulting with the country's religious authority. Also, five death sentences for other members of Morsi's Muslim Brotherhood were confirmed. We were all more charitable last year.
Americans gave an estimated $358 billion to charity last year, about $47 billion more than in 2007, the previous peak of charitable giving in the U.S. That's according to the Giving USA Foundation, an organization that tracks charitable giving. Last year was the fifth year of increase giving, but the foundation had not expected donations to reach pre-recession levels for a few more years. Lisa Lacera, Fox News Radio.
People have been losing money on Wall Street lately, and futures are down this morning after a sell-off yesterday. Markets have been falling overseas as well. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. Pennsylvania's General Assembly once again is looking at a possible expansion of gambling to try and meet budget shortfalls. This time around, the proposal is to legalize online gambling, which, as one senator said just last week, it would in effect put a slot machine in every home, even at 3 a.m. Well, first, government gambling revenues don't match the promises. You remember the property tax relief that Ed Rendell promised when legalizing casinos? Well, that hardly materialized. And as we predicted at that time, casino gambling would create nearly 300,000 gambling addicts statewide, causing crime, bankruptcy, family breakup, and suicide. The most recent survey shows we're at 280,000 addicted gamblers in Pennsylvania and climbing. Government-sponsored gambling is a bad idea, and adding to it is simply irrational. Find out more about this issue at our website at pafamily.org.